If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm one of those guys. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica. Ben, are we doing silly opens from now on?
Deep Man, I'm fucking loopy right now.
Oh yeah, why?
I was on a trip where I was, I think, 10 hours time difference. And that was, I got back on.
That's almost one whole flippity flop.
Yeah, I got back on Monday and we are recording this on Friday and I am still not right.
That's how it is, right? When you go to a far off place, the lag. I mean, that's what the kids call it.
Yeah. When
you get to the new place, the lag's not thick at all. Because you're in a new place and that's a distraction. But when you get home,
yeah,
back to the familiar, that's when that lag thick.
That lag is really thick, man. I think it's somewhat directional for me also.
Mm-hmm.
I think traveling west fucks me up a lot more than traveling east.
Is that how it's supposed to go?
I don't know. Because I went to Japan one time from New York and that was also a really massive time difference. And I was miserable the entire time I was there because I just wanted to sleep during the day and I laid in bed looking at the ceiling all night.
Miserable in Japan.
Yeah.
The Benjamin R. Harrison story.
Yeah. Well, I marketed a very successful t-shirt to that effect.
Right.
But man, yeah, I'm waking up at like 4 a.m. every day.
This is now. This is cut to now. This is you? 4 a.m. Yeah. Wake-ups?
4 a.m. wake-ups.
Wow.
Getting not enough sleep.
Yeah,
you're
one of those guys that needs 10 to 12.
I'm like a cat, you know? Yeah. Most of my time I spend sleeping.
You're far friendlier than a cat, Ben. You're not a cat because you care about human contact.
I will not tolerate slurs against one of the great types of animals, Adam.
Yeah, the cat would be your animal, wouldn't it?
It is. I love a cat.
Cats are fine. So you're a week back and you're still not right. What do you think it's going to take? Just time and tide?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know, man.
Are you brute forcing yourself into staying up as late as you can or are you going to bed early?
I'd say like the first night I was back, I managed to stay up till like 8:30 and then I crashed and I slept for 11 hours. Like I slept a ton that night and then every night since, I've been making it to like 9:45, 10, 10:30, but I'm still waking up super early, and I just feel off.
I'm surprised on a couple of levels. I'm surprised that the lag still has its claws in you. I'm also surprised that you're not telling me all about Africa.
Oh, yeah.
It's your favorite subject.
What?
Why don't you tell me and our friends in the listening audience what that was like?
Ben gets the call very late at night. His wife hears only whispers of some quiet conversation. He's coming in 12:30 flight. Status upgrade into a lay flat seat for sleep salvation. He clears customs with a carne, hoping to film some fun exotic worlds or eat the rawest meat. He returns and cannot wait to say, boy oh boy, I've got stories for you. It doesn't take a lot to get me telling you. There's nothing Ben would love more than to tell you. Ben's gonna talk about Africa. It's gonna take some time to tell you things you never asked.
I detect some like weird resentment in the way you brought that up. I guess I'll just interpret it as jealousy.
Sure.
But a dear friend of mine got married in Kenya, and I went to the wedding.
Pretty great.
Yeah, it was on a beautiful beach a little bit south of Mombasa, and I got to ride a camel.
Wow.
It was a hoot. It was just the greatest.
Was the camel the person who brought the rings up?
Well, the camel participated in one of... They got married like twice, 2 days in a row. They did a traditional Somali ceremony the first day, and then the next day they did like a more Western-style wedding. But for the Somali ceremony, they like came in on camelback.
Wow.
The bride and groom.
Is it hard to get up and down from one of those? It feels like it's too tall.
It's really tall.
Like,
but
you need a rope ladder or something.
They like get down on the ground for you.
Oh, that's right. They kneel. They kneel like one of those kneeling buses.
Yeah, but it's nuts because they get up with their back legs first. So they like pitch forward and you're like 45 degrees forward. And then they stand up on their front legs.
Like if a kneeling bus could shoot explosive diarrhea and spit at you and bite, that's yeah. What a camel is.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So
and they're fast too, right? Like, don't they run super fast? There's camel races and stuff?
There are camel races. The camel ride was arranged by my friend's sister. She was like, I know that a lot of people are going to want to go on these camels. So she just told the camel guy to come back with the camels like the day after the wedding. And
hey, we're going to want to see those camels again, guy.
Yeah.
Come on back.
So I took like a 20-minute walk down the beach ride on the camel.
What did it smell like?
Camels are smelly.
Yeah. Did you smell afterwards?
No, because I was on like a blanket.
Was he friendly?
No. Yassine the camel was crazy.
So you did not try to pet him or like form
you know,
a bond?
Like, when I was up on him, I was like petting his neck and giving him pats and stuff.
You're a good boy.
He seemed pretty indifferent to that. He was mostly angry at the other camels and trying to start shit with them.
Wow.
I felt like there was a non-zero risk, but I didn't know how to assess how big a risk that he was going to like fully get in a camel fight while I was on his back.
Yeah, and you're sort of playing that out in your mind, right? Like, what are you going to do? Am I going to have to stab this camel while sitting on him?
If I have to hop off the camel, it's like a 9-foot drop to the ground.
Yeah. You know? You could have Christopher Reeved yourself.
I could have. Fortunately, it's sand, so probably like a little bit forgiving, but still a potential like trip to a hospital in a developing country, which is not necessarily the ideal.
What you like to avoid, if possible.
Yeah.
Did you eat any raw meat products? I know that's your way. Eat the most dangerous thing in any developing country. What'd you eat and drink?
Usually the most dangerous thing to eat in a developing country is raw veg.
Right.
Because it's often washed with the local water.
Yeah.
And you just don't have gut immunities toward the, you know. Like I got sick the first week I was in Ireland just because like the bugs are a little different, you know?
Did you get the thing you got in Mexico?
I did not. Well,
that's good. You avoided alcohol poisoning?
Ill. Yeah. How dare you?
That's good. Oh, you know what? Serious and sincere question. Was there a strange and exotic liquor that you can only get there that you had looked forward to having again? Like, as a famous cocktailman,
yeah.
I imagine it's fairly exotic and fun that way.
There is not, I mean, there's like a rum that's only available in Kenya, I think. But also there's a, you can get like Cuban rum.
Yeah, there. Yeah.
So I drank quite a bit of Havana Club while I was there. And one beverage that I'm quite fond of that's available in Kenya is called Stony Tangawizi. And it's a ginger ale, but it's like super duper gingery.
Yeah.
I would compare it to a Bundaberg ginger beer kind of deal.
A ginger beer with pulp, basically.
Yeah, it's a very popular soda from what I can tell. Like every place you go has it. So I was getting Stony and Havana as a mixer, and it was real nice.
That's fun.
I mean, it was funny because a big part of the ceremony was a fairly traditional Muslim affair, and there were a lot of members of the family that do partake in alcohol, but many that don't and do some policing of that type of behavior among their family members.
Oh yeah, so, the fun relatives, you mean?
Yeah, so that, you know, you had to be a little bit discreet about your alcohol consumption, which was kind of a fun, you know, I don't think anybody cared about me drinking, but I was trying to be respectful.
Sure.
To all the people that were there. And in being respectful, like, that's why a mixed drink was good, because to all appearances, I was just drinking a glass of Stony Tangawizi on ice.
You're just a man walking around with a paper bag in his hand. No one's the wiser.
Exactly.
Tell you one thing, Ben. I think two weddings back to back is risky. I'd never want to give my wife an opportunity to say no twice. Like, you get it done on the first night and then you're locked in.
Yeah. I mean, and not just your wife, right? Like, there's also the opportunity for somebody present to voice an objection.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, were you obligated to give two gifts? Is that how that works? That seems like actually a nifty bit of hustle bustle there.
The only wedding gifts they were accepting were donations in their name to a charitable cause. So,
hey, that's nice.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah, I think that's the way to do it. If you don't need a set of plates and a KitchenAid mixer, I would say direct those funds toward people who really do need it.
Toward the plateless.
Yeah.
That's a good policy. We're all old enough to have our own plates. Fortunate enough to do so. Well, Ben, we are fortunate enough to have a great big episode of Deep Space Nine to discuss. What do you say we wander on over to that? It's Deep Space Nine, Season 5, Episode 12, The Begoten.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
Odo has a backache, Adam.
Good morning, Constable.
He does, and it raises a lot of questions, I think. Bashir seems to be treating his presence at the infirmary with a fair amount of incredulity, as though this is a fairly common occurrence. But
yeah,
my question for you is, was the body that was made for Odo by the Founders a perfect body, or are his injuries due to Odo's inexperience in using it?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's some of the dialogue maybe shed some light on that, because Bashir says that he's been walking around too erect, and that's what owes to his backache. He's not used to having a spinal column, so his very stiff way of being in the world is causing him this back pain. And I kind of thought Bashir was going to, you know, prescribe some medical THC or something, and we were going to get chill Odo for the rest of the episode.
Yeah. I mean, we do, just not because of that. Walking around with a spinal cord when you're not used to having one has got to feel like walking around with a butt plug, right? Just a really big butt plug that goes all the way to the neck.
Yeah. That sounds terrible.
Yeah, it really does. That backbone does not have a flared base.
No.
I think this has been a gripe that we've had ever since we knew Odo inhabited a corporeal body. Like, these are problems that have been inferred, but not directly confronted. And yeah. given that this is the episode that is like our last time to ask and answer questions like that, it like whenever
Whoa,
stuff like
what?
Whenever stuff like this comes up in this episode, it makes me feel like, ah, oh, man, shit. Like we're never gonna know. We're never gonna know what it was like.
It would have been great to see him like taking his first poop.
Yeah.
Quark comes in and, you know, there's a bunch of problems with this. Like, I think maybe conducting commerce while somebody is in the middle of an examination at the doctor's office is a bit uncouth. Also, selling a baby.
Odo's like, that looks like a bottle of aftershock. There's no way that's a changeling. And Odo is like, oh, it'll change you. Enough of that aftershock will change anyone forever. You ever have aftershock, Ben? The high school liqueur with the sugar crystals at the bottom?
I'm Googling it. I've never heard of this product.
This in high school was the beverage of choice. This in its day.
What the fuck high school did you go to? Jesus.
This is like the stupid high schooler order from an older person at a liquor store, right? Like, you don't know what you're getting. Just get me something red and sweet or blue and sweet. Like aftershock came in a variety of colors, but it all tasted bad. And what made aftershock unique was that it had sugar crystals at the bottom. It looked like a little mountain range and the bottle was frosted. It's like, it was as popular then as Fireball is today. And I think it's about the same flavor, which is to say bad.
Oh man.
It is not good.
This is so foul looking.
Yeah. Consider yourself lucky you never lived through the aftershock years.
I didn't drink at all in high school, so that's probably why.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you lucked out by skipping that and saving it for college. College drinking, I mean, if allow me to share some fatherly advice to our younger viewers. I think it's okay to save the drinking until college, because if you're getting your booze from someone, I think a college-age person will know more what to get for you than a high schooler with an older brother who's an idiot who might get you aftershock or Yukon Jack or some shit that I had to deal with.
Yeah, that's going to give you just a rager of a hangover.
You need a liquor Sherpa, and the best ones are in college. That's what I think.
College and older.
Yeah.
I mean, they get better and better.
By design, they have to. There's nothing worse than the high school liquor buy.
Yeah. So this is a baby changeling that Quark has humanoid trafficked.
Mm-hmm.
And Odo purchases it, and then they start to, you know, see what's wrong with it. Because initially they interpret it as maybe being dead. But
those are just sugar crystals.
The doctor determines that it's in fact just like badly irradiated.
The backstory to these things are incredible, right? The founders shot a bunch of these babies into the universe, and their idea was to just see how different species in the universe treats a weak and vulnerable little baby Odo.
That's why Odo didn't know anything about them growing up. These people that are up on their high horse about, we've never killed anybody.
Yeah, are like genociding their own people. They're like taking scoopfuls out of the Golden Lake, putting it into one of those like tube things you find at a bank, and then just shooting it into the universe to see what happens. It's insane.
And now listen, I know that we have a long-standing track record of 100% murder-free, but what I am proposing is that we shoot thousands and thousands of helpless infants, our own helpless infants, into the cosmos just to see what happens.
It's a real pro-life argument, Ben. This entire plan assumes that the parents won't eventually return to pick up their kids, right? And at no point is that even close to mentioned here. And that was immediately where my mind went, was like, oh my God, this
security should be extremely tight, right?
They feel a sense of security about the baby itself, but not about who might be coming to come get it.
Yeah. And we know that there have been infiltrators and
right.
and that like their secrets are not always safe.
Yeah. all of those concerns are dismissed throughout the episode. Like everyone's idea about putting up a force field or locking it down or posting a security guy nearby, like Odo just sort of dismisses
it. It's a baby.
Yeah.
Leave it alone.
What's it going to do? Kill everyone on the station?
This thing is like drinking glass size at this point.
Right.
And Bashir manages to purge it of Tetrion radiation. And it goes from blue to gold. And the idea is that Odo is going to try to raise it for his own. And Sisko suggests, like, maybe get Dr. Mora, the scientist with the same haircut as you from Bajor, to come up and help you out with it, change the deities and whatnot. And Odo rejects this because we know that he hates Dr. Mora's guts, despite the fact that they had a pretty cathartic coming together the last time we saw Dr. Mora.
Yeah, that whole sitch was forgotten. There are still some bad feelings between them.
Yeah, it seemed like they were heading in a really positive direction last time.
Yeah.
This really resets them.
This little changeling really changes Odo. We see parts of Odo's personality we've never seen before. There's a great amount of care and attention and affection he gives to this thing.
I'm not going to make the same mistakes that were made with me.
It's affection that is born out of a sense of duty, almost. Like, he has a long monologue that is pretty touchingly delivered to this glass of gold goo, where he's basically saying, like, I'm not going to be my father.
Yeah. That's really it, isn't it? It's the new parents going, I'm not going to be like my parents with this one.
I'm not going to make the mistakes that they made.
Yeah.
And making the case that he has a real axe to grind here.
Supporting Odo's argument is the pan flute music of the Wisdom of Ancient Civilizations that plays in the background.
Yeah.
So you know it's true.
Yeah. I guess at this point, Voyager is probably going, right? So they've really they've got like a pan flute guy on speed dial.
Yeah, they've got 200 tracks of 4-pay pan flute audio at their disposal. The B story this episode is the birth of the O'Brien child by way of Kira.
Yeah, and this is like a deep B, I would say.
Yeah.
They really don't burn a lot of screen time on this, but...
A B that's almost as deep as the V's. Right?
Man. I don't know if you're talking about shirts or pussy.
See, I'm just leaving it up to the imagination. It can be whatever you want.
For Bajoran women, giving birth is all about being relaxed.
Anyways, the way Bajoran women give birth is by chilling the fuck out. So somebody's going to get super chill in this episode, just not Odo.
You're not bearing down. It's the opposite of bearing down, right?
Yeah.
There's no ice chips to chew on.
Yeah, it's bliss out, baby.
It's like Jell-O.
Yeah, and apparently the most relaxing soundscape that can be provided is like a couple of maracas and a gong being played rhythmically by the people present.
What you want to do is raid the children's hand percussion trunk in their music class, distribute all of those instruments to the people in the room, and then really go to town.
The people present are Miles and Keiko, a Bajoran doula.
She's a Bedoula, right?
Yeah, I'd say so. The doctor kind of comes in and out. He's making the case that he's got a lot of stuff on his plate. He's a busy man, but he'll rush back if it looks like it's going. But he's going to let them do their thing. And they're doing their best to get her chilled out. But she is a bit agitated because the most calming, dare I say boring, character in the show has not showed up yet.
I called him almost 6 hours ago. It takes half that time to make the trip from Bajor.
He's really crucial for this birth, I think.
Without Chakar, nobody can get bored enough to deliver a baby.
I mean, outside of Worf, I mean, I guess we're talking about tertiary characters here. I can't think of another character that has been so ruined by this show Like, Shikar was a fucking war hero, and now he is a total snooze.
Yeah, very milquetoast leader of Bajor.
Yeah.
Shikar doesn't seem to want anything. I think that's the problem.
That's it exactly. He doesn't want anything. He doesn't really miss Kira. He doesn't feel concerned or apologetic for arriving late. He's just kind of there going through the motions. And I think that's what sells how boring he is as a character. He seems bored with himself.
Right. I think it's a real miss on the writing of him. Like, we've got Kai Winn advocating for a specific position and Shikar just nothing for a nothing position.
Yeah, I mean, Shikar was set up to be the counterpoint to Kai Winn. And
it would be so interesting if he was like really different from her, but also had major disagreements with Sisko or something.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there's a lot of potential in that character.
In a show with 40 episodes a season, like you need as many conflicts as you can get, I think.
Yeah.
It's weird to cul-de-sac him the way that they've done. Gul-de-cut. Gul-de-cut.
Gul-de-cut. So Odo puts his baby in a beverage glass and takes it to Quark's. I wasn't sure if that was just to like, so that the baby is undercover. Maybe there is some security taking place. Nobody else knows that this is a baby. They just think he's got another pint of ale, as is his way.
The thing about sticking a baby changeling into a beverage glass that you're doing is you're setting up a hilarious pratfall later.
Yeah, why doesn't Worf take a sip and pronounce it delicious?
It never pays this off.
Ugh.
It was comedy edging. Like, throughout the episode, I'm like, well, certainly now someone is going to accidentally eat the baby.
It is fucking infuriating.
Oh, it's so bad.
But he's what he's trying to do is kind of like show the baby around. Here's where I live. These are the kinds of people that live here. You know, Worf comes up and asks a question and then just leaves. I think that might be the only thing he gets to do in the episode.
Constable, why are you talking to your beverage?
Cut, Trent, check the gate, moving on.
The wink and finger gun of comedy of Worf looking at his own drink, wondering if what's in the glass is actually prune juice is pretty fun to me.
Yeah.
What do you make of Odo describing his environment the way that he is? Because he is injecting a kind of affection for the station that I don't think we've heard up until now. Is he trying to sell the baby changeling on living there with him forever, and that's his reason for being so positive about it? Because this is
Alec
also...
Alec Baldwin is like, put that glass of changeling down. Changeling is for closers only.
Yeah, because this is a character up until now who has sort of like dutifully lived there, begrudgingly befriended people. He's neutral most of the time about his circumstances.
Yeah, he is coming from an interesting place in that respect. Like, he doesn't seem to have any higher ambition than being the constable of Deep Space Nine. I guess his like main character motivation is wanting to make Kira his girlfriend.
You know what kind of makes sense is like that thing that happens when a lonely person gets a pet or babysits a nephew or something for the first time. It just sort of unlocks a personality that a person doesn't know is there. And there's this like goose-eyed manner that Odo has for this this baby changeling that really changes him.
Yes, there's goose-eyed manner, Adam. You get the fucking dings.
You love it. All I write down in my notes are titles.
Maybe that's why I never get them, because I don't think to pre-write jokes like that. I just try and be funny in the moment, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I try and I fail.
You're jet-lagged.
Yeah, still jet-lagged.
Enter Dr. Mora.
Oh, no!
He is observing this with the same incredulity as you and I are, I think. He's like, oh, that's cute. He's trying to do science, but he doesn't know what science is.
Mora is also a real size freak. He is really blown away at what a honker this changeling is.
A buddy of mine sent me a picture of the promo item that Boogie Nights gave away when it was in theaters. Uh-huh. Do you know what it was?
No.
A clear ruler. I thought that was that's brilliant.
Funny. Yeah.
Speaking of size freaks, that's what
if you measure up to the Diggler.
Where do you start the measurement for the goo, though? Where's the base of the goo is my question.
That's a good question.
The end of the Petri dish is where you have to start, right?
Right. They do a lot of really fun framing tricks with the Petri dishes and the goo in this episode.
Yeah.
I really liked how, like, clearly, like, they're swapping out one Petri dish for another so that, like, a fairly stiff, gelatinized substance can be traded for one that will pour from one thing to another.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll do, like, four or five swaps within a shot by just, like, having Odo's hand go out of frame briefly and come back up with a different thing.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really nicely done. I think you don't need to do it all in one shot, but it really adds to the sense that this is a somewhat magical substance.
Yeah, it's some low-cost effects work here, and it works.
So, you know, Mora comes into this to be the father figure that Odo needs to reconcile himself with somewhat in order to become a competent father himself. But I think Mora is a piece of shit, because the first thing that they start to talk about is like, hey, heard you stopped being able to change shape. That is real tough. I was really sorry to hear that. You couldn't send a card or anything, Mora? This is the first you're talking to him about it?
You know what? A card is just a reminder of how solid he is. Like, you want to do is send something soft, right?
Oh, yeah.
Missing you. And it's like a lava lamp.
Cross-stitch it on a pillow.
Yeah, Mora is really in a tough spot because Odo is treating him like an estranged father. And Mora is there to do science. He sees this as an opportunity to do a couple things. To maybe correct the mistakes of the past in studying a new baby changeling. And also maybe correct a broken relationship with Odo.
Yeah, I mean, Odo is really resistant to Mora's ministrations here because Mora did a lot of things that Odo considered to be hostile when he was a baby changey.
It's weird that Odo doesn't see the similarity between, like, tough policing and tough love. There seems to be a parallel there that he just doesn't grasp.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that, like, for all that, the relationship felt really realistic to me. Like, if we're going to set aside the previous Mora encounter
as non-canonical Mora.
But like the resentment he feels for the way he was parented, it feels authentic. And also when you see it from Mora's side, you realize that Mora was doing the best he could with little to no information about how to proceed. And like once he realized that Odo was a sentient being, changed his strategy quite a bit.
Yeah.
Like
he doesn't get credit for that.
Yeah, but both grievances are like valid given their perspective on it.
Sure.
I think.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a really nice part of the episode. Is like it really helps you see it from both sides.
We go back to Kira occasionally in this episode, and her labor just keeps stopping. It's very frustrating for everyone involved. Traditional Bajoran birth, very slow and boring.
Yeah, it's you know, like any really like orthodox performance of a religious ritual, it's just it winds up really dragging forever and ever.
Yeah, you really want to eat first.
Yeah. And you know, maybe like discreetly play a game on your iPhone or something.
Right. In addition to the whole parent allegory, there is really an animal training allegory going on here too, right? The two schools of thought being the Odo school of a food-based or treat-based way to train something, and then
only positive reinforcement,
and then Mora's rolled up newspaper way.
Be still, Cody.
Yeah. And so that is an interesting conflict that plays out here until a deadline is given, and nothing spurs progress like a deadline.
Right. This is an angle that I thought that they could have explored a little bit more, a la Data deciding to have a child. Like, Sisko comes in and says, hey, Starfleet is going to need daily updates, and if you guys don't demonstrate progress,
Starfleet is going to want to take over the project.
I was blown away that Odo was like, all right, thanks for letting me know.
I mean, I'd rather this thing not get kennel cough, but...
As long as you're making progress, there's nothing to worry about.
Sisko's not in this episode very much, but he's in to just sort of throw a Molotov cocktail into a scene and then leave.
What are you doing now?
This pivots the plan into the Mora way of doing things.
Right, which is that occasionally you're going to have to like apply some negative reinforcement. And the form that that takes is they have like a big petri dish and most of it is electrified, but there's like a little spot in the center that is not. And so this light shock encourages the goo to collect itself in the center. And they're like holding each other's hands and tearing up when it reacts to the shock and goes and moves into the center. And I think that like this is the moment where they start to like really connect emotionally with each other.
Right. Because they get to share in the success of this thing.
Right.
I think it's super interesting that Mora makes Odo hold the cow poker, you know? Like Odo's the guy that hits the button that makes the shock happen.
Right.
It can't be Mora again. And that's the thing that creates this bond between them. It has to be that way, right?
Yeah, it's deft on Mora's part to take that step back. He keeps himself like they're gonna do stuff that he learned how to do back when he was figuring out what Odo was, but he's still just there to observe and advise.
Right. The experiments as they go on succeed at a rate faster than what Mora was able to do with Odo, and this injects another bit of conflict between them because Odo starts to feel what seems like envy for the little changeling's progress.
Right.
As like the more that Mora gets excited about how quickly it's adapting.
Yeah.
Odo is like, well, I'm pretty cool too. I mean, at least I was.
Yeah. So setting himself up for another kind of bad parenting, which is the parent that resents the brilliance of their child.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That's great.
I mean, what a fun kind of parent to have, right?
Feels good.
Chakar and O'Brien are starting to get into a bit of a conflict because Chakar keeps on like walking in on Chief O'Brien giving his girlfriend a foot rub or whatever. And that's, he's not really down with that.
To the degree that Chakar can show any kind of emotion at all, it appears as though he's mildly irritated by this scene.
Yeah. And he shows that through, like, manhandling Kira.
The director's like, Chakar, so you're at a 1 right now. I need you to, like, at least give me a 2.
And he gives him a 0.5 yeah. instead.
And welcome you into the world.
But yeah, she's going to go into labor, Adam.
She's at fully relaxed. Things are just going to slide out now.
Speaking of things sliding, the most exciting scene for Odo is when he and Mora are about to, you know, walk out of the room and go have a chat when they turn around and they see that this little changeling has turned into kind of a wormy shape and it's trying its derndest to make a face on the end of that worm.
Yeah.
Very touching moment. Very the abyss moment.
Right. This was one of those effects that they didn't have the budget for. And so one of the effects guys just like pulled a stocking over his face and covered himself with Vaseline and they shot it. And then they comped it in. Like it was at one time going to be totally digital. And they're like, well, we could try this thing. And it totally worked.
It looks good.
Nicely done.
I thought that the like both the digital effects and the physical effects in this were great. Like they had so many different like textures of goo, like letting it like slump out of containers.
Yeah.
And you know, like the cranberry sauce at Thanksgiving effect.
That's fun.
It was really good.
They showed a lot of restraint by not making that super long farting sound of a barely set jello coming out of a form.
Right.
That's just for the crew. that they show later for laughs.
Right. They, but Mora and Odo are just giddy with how excited they are about this. And Odo, as a workaholic, demonstrates his excitement by rushing back to his office and trying to get some security work done.
Yeah.
And Mora's like, dude, knock it off. Like, this is going great. Let's go have a drink and celebrate.
Two glasses of champagne, please.
But this is the conversation where they kind of start to understand where each other was coming from when the conflict all arose, I think.
Yeah. I mean, this is a kind of conversation that grown kids can occasionally have with their parents, that tough love conversation,
right,
in an attempt to create an understanding. And alcohol often makes that conversation possible the way it does here.
Yeah. Like, I think Odo can kind of see now how with just a jar full of goo that he knew nothing about, Mora tried a lot of things, and many of those things wound up being mistakes.
Yeah.
But they kind of formed in him a very forbidding personality.
I think Odo was going to resent anyone, right?
Yeah.
Do you get the feeling that that's the point? Like, Mora could have been the most kind or the most cruel, and it's Odo's personality that just makes him the way he is.
Yeah, it's a nature versus nurture issue, and it's like you can't separate the variables.
Yeah, interrogating that, I mean, do you think Odo had a fully formed personality when he arrived in the beaker? Or was it Mora's experimentations that created that?
Yeah.
I think I'm of the camp that he already had the personality.
Mora definitely seems to believe that if he had been slightly more cautious, Odo wouldn't have been such an asshole when he grew up.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they have a lot of, they share a lot of their favorite memories, and many of those memories are reactions that Odo had to Mora's experiments that involve, like, slapping his hand away from a cattle prod or...
Right.
Or breaking stuff in his office. You know, the good old days.
Yeah.
Back to Casa de O'Brien, Kira is in full labor and Shakar is being a huge dick to Miles. He does not want to grant Miles O'Brien access to territory below the Mason-Dixon line. And Shakar also is acting like O'Brien wanted this. Like, he wanted his baby inside his girlfriend. And my question for you is Shakar literally clueless, or is he just like being an idiot clueless?
Oh, do me a favor. Next time you have a baby, leave my girlfriend out of it, huh?
Like, he knows the story of why the baby's in Kira, right? How could he possibly resent Miles O'Brien for this?
I was trying to think of if we have seen Shakar since the baby was beamed into Kira storyline started.
Someone needs to catch him up if he doesn't know. Wait, so Kira's pregnant. What happened, babe?
She spent some time visiting him on Bajor, right?
I mean, he's oblivious, but he had to notice the bump.
Right.
And the sneezing.
Yeah. I just wish that they'd, like, written it a little funnier, you know, like, O'Brien's like, I've been helping her into the tub for months. I've seen everything. Everything.
I've seen it all. Yeah, no shit. Yeah, I feel like O'Brien could have pushed back more forcefully, and it would have been his right to do. He has been a great caretaker for her.
Yeah, but she kicks both of them out of the delivery room, and I was really excited for O'Brien misses both of his children's birth as a new character element.
As an ongoing way to punish Miles O'Brien.
Yeah. Like, he is the Bill Dotrieve of this show, you know. He's there to be a punching bag, and sadly they let him back in just in time for the baby to come out. And it's kind of like simultaneous that the O'Brien baby is born healthy and beautiful as the computer alerts Odo that something is amiss with his unknown sample.
Computer to security chief Odo, please acknowledge.
Go ahead.
We kind of cross-cut between gooey babies, don't we?
We sure do. It's gooey babies all the way down, Adam.
Yeah. pretty realistic looking newborn. Like what you get in TV in the late 90s is like very big newborns. And this is one of them, certainly. But a fair amount of goo on the kid. Looks good.
It's a good looking kind of goo. It doesn't look just like, you know, raspberry syrup or whatever.
This child actor gets his very first full frontal nude scene also.
Yeah, you get paid extra for that.
Yeah, he's like the Nirvana baby.
Mm-hmm. But in the infirmary, Odo is saying goodbye to his now now blue baby. And he decides to do this by pouring it into his cupped hands. And, you know, as he's pleading with this baby not to give up the ghost, it just absorbs right into his skin.
It looks like it should feel away, right? But the read on Odo's face is one of grief and loss, and not that like something has happened to him physically.
Right. Yeah. It's like a whoa, where'd it go?
Yeah, yeah.
And then something happens to him physically.
Yeah. He does magic hands to Dr. Mora and Bashir.
Yeah, he shows that there's nothing up either sleeve.
Bashir spits it out.
Yeah. Get out of here, David Blaine.
Pretty awesome moment.
Yeah, because Odo then pushes them aside, goes to the exit, his clothes slump on the floor, and out flies a bird of prey.
Yeah.
He's got his changing, his shape-shifting ability back.
It would have been fun for Odo to just stand there and awkwardly, like, physically take off his clothes before walking out of the infirmary.
Yeah.
This belt is always the toughest part. Hold on. just hold on right there. This is going to be great.
My somewhat misshapen fingers always struggle with these little fiddly bits.
My hands are kind of numb. I don't know if you noticed that changeling just sort of disappeared into them.
There was some discussion earlier that there was like a zero-G trapeze performance or something going on in the in the promenade, and I thought it would have been really fun if this bird had flown out and then just like run right into a trapeze artist swinging from the ceiling.
Totally Fabio's the trapeze artist's face.
I also thought it would have been really nice if Change Leader had shown up and been like, damn it, this is terrible, Odo, because we hate you and we want you to be sad.
This is a momentous situation here.
Yeah, it's just like, hey, remember when we took this this character's like main interesting thing about him away? It's back now.
Yeah, that's really the thing, isn't it?
It feels it does not feel like he got it back on terms that are commensurate with the way it was taken away.
Hard agree, and in Odo's case, soft agree.
Yeah. Odo gone gold.
Morn, morn,
morn.
Dear sweet
morn,
morn,
morn. You here, buddy?
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
The button on the episode is Shakara and Kira walking to the transport in a way that betrays no affection whatsoever between them.
Yeah.
He like invites her to Bajor for coffee, and she turns it down. And then as soon as he leaves, he's like, he didn't mean coffee. I'm an idiot.
Coffee isn't coffee. Coffee is sex.
Yeah, I mean, when she turns him down, you really get the sense of their distance, you know? Like, if they really cared a lot about each other, I think that's an invitation she would have accepted. Is the relationship even plausible at this point? It doesn't seem like that's the case. But she is clearly disturbed by other things, and those other things are what she discusses with Odo, because Odo and Mora take a similar walk.
Yeah, and I think conversely, Odo and Mora's final conversation is extremely cathartic and heartfelt.
Yeah, that's what this episode does. We're seeing a lot of things back to back that we're meant to compare.
Right.
They're equal and opposite emotionally.
Right, and Mora is making the case that this changeling's final wish was maybe for Odo to get back what he lost, I felt like this scene went a long way toward bringing impact to Odo getting his ability back that felt lacking the moment it happened.
Mm.
And it is really touching. Like, they share an embrace at the end, and like Odo like tilts his head down and puts it on Mora's shoulder, and I thought that was it was really sweet.
I thought this scene and their moment at the end was the highlight of the episode. I thought it was so well written and well acted. It was surprisingly so.
Yeah, and a wonder where the camera pans away as Mora walks out and Kira walks in and expresses really deep regret that she is not going to be the mother of the baby she just delivered.
Yeah, she's lost something here. And she confides that with Odo.
And their loss is very similar.
Yeah.
You really want to do this? Here, now, okay, let's do it, do it!
Do we feel similarly about the episode, though, Ben?
You know, this is one of those episodes that, like, the last 2.5 minutes felt redemptive of an episode that didn't seem that good up until then.
Yeah.
There's a lot I liked about it. Like, I think that Rene Aubergenois' performance is really great, and his approach to monologuing to a bowl full of goo was excellent, I thought.
Yeah.
But the whole baby delivery storyline was very silly and light, and that Shakaar stuff is really dragging on that storyline, I think.
I read this is the last Shakaar episode, if that gives you any solace.
I mean, I think that bespeaks some wisdom on the part of the showrunner, like seeing that just isn't working and not trying to salvage it, you know, just cut your losses.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not going to use him, get rid of him. Like, right. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Clearly, they don't see his character as a value add. Yeah. Or the actor's off to take another job. Like, any number of things could be going on.
So I think that, like, this episode pulled up right at the end and kind of redeemed itself. And I think I came away liking it.
I think that's really well said by you. The challenge of acting across from goo for any actor, I think, is tough. That kind of monologuing. And especially when we're getting it from a character who does not display emotion in the way that Odo does in those scenes. I don't know whether that presents less of a challenge or more of a challenge for Rene Aubergenois, you know?
Right.
I really wonder a lot about what it was like for Nana Visitor to have just given birth and also express the feelings that many new mothers have about, like, in the aftermath of that, and what must be going through her mind about, like, what an emotional challenge surrogacy must be. Like, for an actor who is as intense as she is,
right?
I wonder what's going on behind her eyes, you know?
Yeah, like, she has some very recent stuff to draw on, and I think that really comes through. Like, she's a great actor all the time, but her performance in this just seems like really spectacularly great.
And restrained, you know? And that's what makes me wonder about her. Like, you know, she can throw the fastball, but she's taken something off of it here in the scene with Odo at the end, especially. Like, it's subtle.
I think that subtlety is, like, really smart, though.
Yeah. Yeah, if you've got someone like her, I think you have to dial it back sometimes so that you can appreciate the moments where she really goes for it.
Yeah.
I think when I think of this episode, though, I am going to think about how that storyline with Odo was bungled. His journey from being a changeling to a solid to a changeling again was such that, like, we never felt the true depth of his loss. And so when he is able to gain it back at the end, I never felt the true elation of that moment. Like, he's an eagle, and like, what's the one thing that flying is supposed to transmit to you emotionally? It's supposed to be incredible and fill you with awe and joy and wonder. But, like, not having gone all the way down with him, like, I can't get all the way up with him either at the end of this episode. And so it made me sad that we weren't permitted to get all the way sad for him, and it and it stopped me from getting all the way happy for him. At the end, like, stakes equal feelings for me and my ability to have them. And without the stakes being as high as they could have been, it was enjoyable, but it could have been like a real stomach punch, and it wasn't.
Yeah. Well, do you want to see if we get any stomach punches in the Priority One inbox?
Yeah, let's step Adam into the stomach punch machine.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a couple of P1s here. The first is of a promotional nature. Goes like this. I love your show, and I'm very sad that this might mean in 2 years I will have to watch Voyager. There must be another way. And the call to action is, Voyager is 172 episodes. This person just wrote in that they're sad about a direction our show might take in 2 years. Why didn't you just take $200, go outside, and like set it down on the sidewalk and light it on fire?
Hey, I'm grateful for the $200.
Oh, I am too. I'm just saying, like, we're not going to get guilt tripped into doing a different thing.
I mean, it's some food for thought. Let's not dismiss this entirely, Ben. We don't have to do Voyager.
I like Voyager.
And I think this is something to consider.
I stan Voyager, Adam.
You know what? If you want to sit in your room and listen to pan flute tracks all day, you can just do that on your own time. You don't have to involve me in it.
This is a Voyager stan account.
Oh, jeez. Look, we have 2 years to decide. So I say we cliffhanger this.
Wow.
And just see what happens in 2 years. We could be in a very different place in 2 years, Ben.
That's true. We could hate each other's guts.
It seems more likely by the day.
I just wonder who this was.
Oh, you think it's a familiar?
I don't know. I mean, it seems possible.
Which one is my camera? Is this my camera? Identify yourself. Commercial P1 message sender.
Yeah, and identify yourself via a commercial P1.
Yeah.
Or we're not running it.
Yeah. There you go. This is a real hostage situation, Ben.
Yeah.
This got very intense.
Yeah. Stand publicly by your words or say them not at all.
I'm a hostage, Stan. Ben, our second Priority One message is for Grant, and it is from Phil.
Oh.
I don't think these are my Grant and my Phil. I've got two good friends named Grant and Phil.
Haven't we come across Grant and Phil before?
Yeah, I think so. Well, here's their message. Thanks for being my best man. Without your help, I couldn't have gotten all the isolinear chips in order for this voyage. Your speech was smooth as Riker and wise as Guinan. I promise to be an honorable godfather to your second child, the boy. They will grow to master both the Bat'leth and the rules of acquisition.
Wow.
Your drunk Shimoda, Phil.
Fun.
That's like a left brain, right brain thing, right? The Bat'leth and the rules of acquisition.
Also, good on you, Grant, for having a good wedding speech.
Yeah, that's not an easy thing to do. And it feels great to pull that off somehow.
Yeah, I was at a wedding, not the most recent wedding, but the wedding before that I was at. One of the people that did a speech was asked to leave the wedding. The speech was so bad.
Oh, man. I'm just getting the chills thinking about that.
Yeah, like got up to do a speech at the wedding reception, was like a house full of dropped jaws as the speech proceeded, and then was not around any longer after that. And I found out later that it was because the groom had asked them to leave the wedding.
Under most circumstances, these speeches occur during the plated dinner portion. So did this person get up, make their speech, and then leave during dinner, leaving their plate and glass behind at the table, like to remind everyone that they're gone?
I think that they kind of did the speeches like toward the end of dinner, so I didn't notice immediately that this person was gone.
Yeah.
But yeah. Asked to leave.
That is some cold shit. But also, right. You're not supposed to fuck up one of those speeches.
Yeah, no. Like, you should run it by someone ahead of time and make sure that they think it's a good idea.
A wedding speech is not a time to get experimental.
No, play to your strengths and be a little bit funny, but mostly just be heartfelt and congratulatory.
Yeah, guess what? The only thing you can make fun of is yourself at a wedding speech.
Yes. Well, Adam, you can't get asked to leave a wedding for a priority one message. So we hope people will head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron or MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. I think both work now.
Right.
And order a P1.
Or
$100 for
MaxFunkenstein.sex. Does that go to the same
place? That's just the donation page now.
Oh, okay. That's right.
Yeah. Order yourself a personal message for $100, a commercial message for $200, or reveal your identity for $200.
Yeah, fair price. All of which go a long way towards the ongoing production of this great show.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
Yeah, it's Shikar. He went from being a really interesting and cool character into a fucking dope. And this was a bad way for him to go out.
Yeah.
I don't lay this at the feet of the actor who plays Shikar whatsoever, because we know what he's capable of. I think he's a pretty cool dude. But
he seems good.
I wish he had just gone out in a hail of phaser fire or something. Or like a transporter accident that reduced him into a mist. Like,
yeah, or like got assimilated by the Borgs. Something like really intense.
I know we're going to hear about what happened to him and he will leave off camera. But I don't know. It's too bad. Like, when Kira really cares about a person or a thing, I think whenever that person or thing goes away, they should be given the gift of like a proper send-off. Yeah.
Right. You want him lying on the ground, coughing up blood while she... leans over him,
God,
weeping.
Couldn't you just see it? I mean, when we met them both at that farmhouse on Bajor, like, that's what the promise was. Mouthful of blood.
Yeah, that's what that character was set up to do.
Yeah, he was meant to get kicked by a Bajoran mule and dying in a crumpled heap outside his farm. What about you, Ben? Who's your drunk Shimoda?
My drunk Shimoda is Dr. Mora for not sending that card when he heard about Odo losing his shape-shifting ability. It's easy to send a card.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it seems like a hassle. Oh, I gotta go down to the Walgreens and get a Hallmark. Just make it happen. It'll take 5 minutes, and then that person knows that you're thinking about them and you care about them.
It's fun to send cards. And it doesn't have to be that hard. You know what you do? You buy a stack of cards without an occasion to send them.
Whoa.
And then when the occasion arises... You get your blanks.
Wow.
That's what you do.
Life pro tip.
Then you're ready to go with a card. You can make a person's day by sending them a card. And not just an old person either. People of all ages appreciate getting a card.
Yeah. It's nice to get a card.
Send a card.
Gotta get that cold press latte. Get that
cold press latte.
Am I right?
I've got to fly cross country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusea today. And there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait. And I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS. And with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com, and the promo code is SCARVS. What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my birdie. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
What do we have coming up on the next episode of this great program, Ben?
The next episode is season 5, episode 13, For the Uniform. Sisko risks everything to capture a former crew member who deceived him and joined the Maquis.
Sounds like a fun Cal Hudson episode, Ben.
Oh, that would be great.
Why don't we see where we are going to wear our comm badges while reporting on it? The only way to know that is by going to gawk.biz/game and consulting the Game of Buttholes Will of the Prophets.
That's true, Adam. Currently, we are on square 37. And I think that this is one of those rare squares on the board where no matter what we roll, we are going to have a normal episode. So very little in the way of suspense.
Wow.
As I roll this bone.
All right.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
But I'm going to roll it anyways because we gotta advance the game piece.
Those are the rules. We didn't make them.
Very good. No, I didn't. I just do what I am told. No matter what the horrible consequences are. All right, here we go. And I have rolled a 4, so we are on square 41.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
Which, for the next time, puts us in range of a Coco No-No.
You know what I noticed for the first time? The runabout turns around when you reach the end of a row. That's nice.
Yeah, they did a really nice job setting this website up for us.
I like that too. I like how it sort of pulses.
Yeah, it makes it a little easier to spot now that it's slightly animated.
This is really well done.
Yeah, classy operation over there at Game of Buttholes. The Will of the Prophets.
Way better done than this stupid show. Here we are. Here we are, almost to episode 5,000. With just 4,000 more ups before we start Voyager.
Yep. Yeah, much to one anonymous person's chagrin. but we have some thank yous to give out. First and foremost, we should thank the Friends of DeSoto who contribute to the production of the program by donating at MaximumFun.org/donate. We hugely appreciate all of the generous support. It has made this into a professional pursuit for us, if not a professional operation.
That's right. support for the show also comes from seeing us at live shows and buying some merch. We've got t-shirts and hoodies and glasses, all sorts of things at the Max Fun store. And also, we are on tour right now. If you're listening to the show on the day of its release, we're going to be in Portland tonight. Portland, Oregon.
Whoa! Head to greatestgentour.com. And, you know, I would imagine Portland would have sold out by now, but I have no way of knowing for sure.
Yeah, no idea. If Portland is sold out, buy a ticket to one of our other shows happening throughout the year that potentially aren't sold out.
Use the hashtag GreatestGen to talk about the show online. There are social networks of all kinds for this show. Bill Tilly is on almost all of them, posting his hilarious custom trading cards for each episode. One of my favorite parts of the show.
Bill Tilly, truly the Eddington of the Greatest Generation.
What?
I'm waiting for the double cross, Ben.
Whoa. Nothing would shock me more than if Bill double crossed us.
I know. Wouldn't it? I would never see it coming.
Yeah.
Never.
I would never trust again.
No. I would never love again or trust again. No more friends.
If Bill double-crossed us, I wouldn't know what to believe, so I would just be adrift in the universe.
Yeah. I think the only person with the power to end the show is Bill Tilly with that kind of double-cross. You and I couldn't be friends.
No. Yeah, we would lose trust in each other.
Wow. Stakes are high.
Yeah.
Real high.
Bill, please don't ruin the show.
And on that note, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine that risks everything for a bit.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned, audience supported.